With the drought forecast to intensify over summer, pressure is mounting on the federal government to deliver a national drought strategy. The Minister for Water and Drought, David Littleproud, says the government is waiting on the National Farmers Federation to deliver its strategy first. Last week, the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, toured drought-stricken communities as the government looks for new ways to help communities struggling to survive. I spoke to the Shadow Agriculture Minister, Joel Fitzgibbon, a short time ago on ABC News.
Joel Fitzgibbon, welcome to the program.
A great pleasure, PK.
Let's start on drought. David Littleproud, who's the minister responsible for the drought, says he's waiting for the National Farmers Federation's drought strategy so it can be considered by Cabinet and incorporated into the government's response. Isn't that reasonable?
No, it's extraordinary, PK. I mean, 6 years ago, this government put a pause on the drought reform process started by the former Labor government through the COAG process. Indeed, they abolished the COAG committee charged with progressing that reform based on five key principles agreed by COAG, and that was going to give us a new look, a more proactive and long-term and more strategic drought response for the future. Now, 6 years on, that work hasn't been done. What's really extraordinary is that now, after 6 years, the government, the minister, is saying, oh, it's okay, we're waiting for the National Farmers Federation to write our drought policy for us. I think most Australians would be somewhat surprised by that. And on the question of the report from the Coordinator General, which I think might be the circuit breaker to getting us back on track, the minister can't have it both ways. He says that it's under consideration by Cabinet and therefore it's a secret. But yet, at the same time, he has told the Australian people that there's nothing in Major General Stephen Day's report that the government hasn't already acted on. Now, it can't be both. And it was extraordinary also last week when Treasurer Frydenberg, who'd been charged with going out and learning more about the drought after 6 years on the part of the government, as the Prime Minister said, the person who runs the budget, he admitted that he hadn't even read Major General Day's report. So it's all pretty chaotic, PK.
Okay, you've demanded the Auditor General examine the Drought Assistance Fund after $1 million was given to a shire which then gave back the money because it wasn't needed. Is this the only case you're aware of where a mistake was made?
There are lots of speculation swirling around that there are other local government areas that are only marginally in drought or indeed not in drought at all. And then you've got areas, including in my own electorate, where neighbouring shires under exactly the same circumstances, one is getting it and across the border, the other shire, Singleton, is not receiving it. So there are plenty of examples of things going wrong. And I mean, the very fact, PK, that two Fridays ago, the Prime Minister came back from Washington. He realised people were starting to wake up to the fact that their action on drought has been underdone. So he made an announcement on the Friday. And then last Friday, just a week later, he made another announcement. I mean, if that's not emblematic of the chaotic approach they're taking to drought, I don't know what is.
Clearly the government is looking at spending more money on drought. They've foreshadowed this. We know this. The Treasurer conceding more money should be spent after his own drought tour. Will Labor give bipartisan support to the government to perhaps ramp up the amount of spending that's going to drought in Australia?
Absolutely, PK. And Anthony Albanese did a really extraordinary thing at the Push Summit in Dubbo a few months ago. In front of Scott Morrison and hundreds of other people, he wrote a blank cheque. He said, Prime Minister, whatever you want to spend to do more for our farmers and drought-affected communities, the Labor Party will back. Sadly, though, Scott Morrison's never really taken up that opportunity. But I think, PK, a lot of people would be asking, if Scott Morrison is spending $7 billion on drought relief, where is it? Because the farmers they talk with, the farmers I talk to are saying they are seeing none of it. So there are two scandals here. The first is the Prime Minister says he's spending money that he's not actually spending. And two, any money that is being spent isn't being properly targeted and is not having the effect people would expect it to have.
You were critical of the ALP's election policies and platform, in particular what you saw as abandoning of communities that depend on coal mining, communities like yours. What do you make of this wave of protests now, the climate strikes, this Extinction Rebellion, Spring Rebellion?
Well, I'd say a few things, PK. First of all, I'd say I absolutely respect the right of people to express their view. Second, though, I'm not sure they do their cause great good by disrupting normal citizens trying to make their way to work and back. Although, having said that, history shows that a level of civil disobedience like that is the very thing that gets attention, and that's what you and I are doing now, discussing the protest, and we saw it throughout the Vietnam War. There are plenty of examples. But the other point I'd make is this. While I agree with them that this government nor any other government around the world is taking sufficient action on climate change, I disagree that we have to lose our coal seam gas industry or our coal mining industry to meet our international obligations on climate change.
The Home Affairs Minister, Peter Dutton, has been scathing of the Extinction Rebellion protesters. He's called for them to lose their welfare payments and face tougher penalties. Do you think the penalties in place for these disruptive protests are tough enough?
Oh, well, I don't know what the state penalties are, PK, but, you know, Peter likes to play the hard man. He likes to paint every protester as someone on the dole. And of course, that's not the case. There's a whole broad range of people protesting in our capital cities, not just here in Australia, but across the world. And that's what you'd expect from Peter. They're always trying to distract from the obvious. People are out there protesting in our capital cities and elsewhere because this government and others are not taking meaningful action on climate change. PK, in this country, under this government, our carbon emissions are increasing, not reducing. Now, that's just not good enough. We can take meaningful action without giving over our coal jobs or other blue-collar jobs, but this government is making no effort, and yet they continue to tell the public that they're on track to meet their Paris target. They clearly are not.
But you talk about coal and its future. Do you see an end for coal? And what sort of time frame do you think coal mining will be over in Australia?
Oh, look, I think thermal coal will be in demand internationally for at least 30 years and probably longer as countries like India and China further come out of developing status. They'll consume all the gas, coal, nuclear, wind, solar they can get their hands on. Still 60% of the world's electricity is generated from thermal coal. So that will be strong for a long, long time.
So do you think Labor should support thermal coal for the next 30 years?
PK, Labor has always had a policy which supports the mining and the export of coal. That has never changed, and I don't expect
that,
it to change.
You say that, but you actually argued after the election that you don't think that it seemed that you did have that policy. So now you say you've always had the policy. I don't know if voters thought that.
What I said, PK, is that Adani became very emblematic, and people saw us equivocating over Adani, and then that gave an opportunity for our political opponents to paint us as being anti-coal. When, you know, that's on a whinge from me. If you open yourself up for a scare campaign, as I've said, that's what you'll expect. But remember, PK, by value, 60% of our coal exported is actually metallurgical coal. And those developing nations will have a strong demand for that metallurgical coal for many, many years to come too. And remember, as I've said publicly before, it takes about 200 tonnes of metallurgical coal to build one wind turbine. So if we want China and India in particular to further modernise, they'll need that metallurgical coal to build the renewables for their future. Both thermal coal for making solar panels, for example, and of course metallurgical coal to make wind turbines and the like.
On that issue, the Prime Minister has been trying to put pressure on China, for instance, to be considered a developed country. And one of the issues is, of course, about its emissions and targets, that they should be more ambitious. Do you think that they should ramp up their ambitions as well and should be considered a developed country?
Well, it's another distraction from a Prime Minister without a policy agenda.
But is it a distraction? I mean, they are responsible for a pretty sizable part of the world's emissions. Is it really a distraction, or is it a really normal part of the debate?
A huge amount of the global emissions, and that's why we won't achieve too much unless we have China and India dramatically reducing their emissions as well. And that's why, you know, our thermal coal, clean and efficient, and relatively clean and efficient, will help them in that process, as will our metallurgical coal. But on the question of China's status within in that system, the WTO, you know, the Prime Minister hasn't really identified what the problem is. He says he wants a solution, but he hasn't yet identified what the problem is and how indeed their status in the WTO is a primary problem for Australia. Sure, it's a problem for the US, and we know that story, but he hasn't, you know, before you talk about fixing a problem, you've got to identify what the problem is.
Victorian Labor's submission to the Federal Election Review has blamed a one-size-fits-all campaign that failed to take into account state differences. Should state branches be given a greater say over policy?
Well, state branches are independent. I mean, the Australian Labor Party is a federation, and most of the organisational work is done by state branches. They have a very important role to play. I don't think, PK, that was our big problem at the last federal
what
election.
What was it then?
Well, it's funny you ask that. I'll be making a speech at the Sydney Institute tomorrow night. Where
please
I'll be
tell
a few
me, what will you say?
Things to say about it. Well, I'm keeping my powder dry.
All right, give me a couple of lines. No, you're not getting away with that. Just give me your headline.
I'll send you a copy of the speech at the first opportunity.
Just give me a sense of what you're going to say.
Well, I've already said publicly that our policies were too many and too complex. And Australians are inherently conservative, and they looked at the complexity over here. They didn't really understand all that well, and they looked at Scott Morrison's very simple message, which was basically a promise to change nothing, and he's still promising to change nothing, basically, and they played safe. But I've talked about things like Adani, the way we equivocated there. I've said previously that, when we were said we were going to take money from the rich to give to the poor, we didn't bother to define who the rich were, and people were right to come to the conclusion that we may have been talking about them. And my coal miners, who are on pretty good wages, were amongst those people.
Joel, thanks for coming in.
A great pleasure.
That's Joel Fitzgibbon. He is the Shadow Agriculture Minister, and he joined me a short time ago. This is RN Drive.